The following is a recorded discussion of the Daily Maxims and More for January 13th, 2011. Today our keywords were annul, abrogate, and revoke.
Today's Maxims of Law, dated January 13th, 2011, in the category of annul, abrogate, and revoke. I was looking at the very first maxim, which reads, when the form is not observed, it is inferred that the act is annulled. Now, this is really a subtle one. I'll have to give you a little bit of lead-in information. When the original common law, before it was merged with equity in 1848, was... it had two pieces to it. One was the substantive law side, and the other was the adjective law side. On the substantive side is where they talked about the common law having to do or dealing with rights and remedies. Remedies if the rights had been violated. Now, that's what the maxims usually are talking about. Now, there's the other half of it, which is called the adjective law. The first piece was substantive law, adjective law. Well, the adjective law is all the forms and procedures and tricky little words and dotting the I's and crossing the T's and getting them in the right order that are associated with it. Well, the common law really come up in Old English, and so it's really got some interesting things there. So what they talked about in the adjective law side was the form of action, the form of the action. And the very first action, that is the step, and usually it's taken after you're on the docket, is a thing which is called the declaration. So that when you think of the declaration, which we now call the Declaration of Independence, it was a formal common law declaration that was prepared by Thomas Jefferson as a lawyer to be presented to King George. Now, the Baldwin in the Supreme Court 30 years later confirmed that every action that was taken by the colonists leading up to the Revolutionary War was strict, proper, legal English law actions. There were no revolutionary moves made. So that everything that the colonists did was lawful. Since the Declaration was essentially the first document in an action, or as you would say today, lawsuit, the option was to go to court with it in other forms and things happened. But the king chose not to go to court with it. He chose to send soldiers instead. So, when the form is not observed, it is inferred the act is annulled. Form would have been the whole side and what the declaration said and how it was organized and what it was addressing. And each of those is referred to as an action, the form of action. Now, if the form is not observed, it is inferred that the action is annulled. Okay? If you put it together improperly, it doesn't stand. It doesn't hold water. Therefore, the action can't go on. It can't proceed. So when the form is not observed, it is inferred that the action is annulled. Now, what if you're not a real good lawyer? Yourself, and you're doing it for yourself, you must call attention to the judges and people involved that you are not, and ask that proper form be waived so that you can get to speaking of the actual substance in the situation and not let failure to have a form correct be the reason why the act is annulled. Too fast for you?
No.
Yeah. Everybody get that?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's go to the next one. It matters not whether a revocation be by words or by acts. Now, this one is tricky. I don't know how I could revoke my signature on all of my corporate contracts with words, except that the words be put on paper and submitted so that we could record the fact that they received them. So maybe the whole idea of what we do today is because of distance and using the mail. Let's visualize back in the 1700s. What it means is you could go in person and revoke it. Okay? Or you could do it formally through legal proceedings. We are left with using proper UCC proceedings now, and that's what we generally use to perform a revocation. So seldom, I guess, do we ever go in person and try to have the word stand up, because there's too much volume, too many people, how do I know it was you, all that sort of thing. But if you insist, you could do it in such a way. Let's say you took two witnesses with you, and they stood and heard you revoke it, and then they prepared an affidavit before two witnesses, and or signed it before two witnesses, and let the affidavit stand. Anyway, it still would take an act, as you can see. Some action. Anything? Any questions on that one?
That makes sense. I do have a general question. If I need to, can I mute myself out with star 6?
I do not know.
Okay. Well, if I get interrupted here, I don't want to cause confusion in the call, so that's why I was asking.
Just try using your mute button on your phone.
Okay.
Okay. I don't see you on the list here, so I can't mute you automatically. So.
Let me try the star 6 here. Hold on a second. Let me try this.
All right. Looks like it worked.
Are you there?
It works. It tells me I'm muted when I do it. Okay.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Good. Just wanted to get there. Thank you.
Laws now are abrogated or repealed by the same authority by which they are made. If it's from the people, they cannot be repealed or abrogated by the legislature. Have you got that one?
Yep.
If it's by the legislature, they can repeal it. Okay? Now, let me give you the significance of that. If it's from the people, can the legislature change the form of the government of which they're a part?
If it's from the people?
Yes. The people said, you will call yourself the Congress of the United States, and you'll be made up of two houses, the Senate and the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate, there'll be suffrage in the number two vote equal suffrage, number being two. The House will be one representative for each, I think it's 35,000. And it will have to reach number of 65,000, but there'll never be less than one. Now, does the Congress have the ability to change that?
Not without the people saying that.
Okay.
Only through delegated power, right?
No. They have been delegated the power. They were delegated power in that form. That's how they exercise power.
Is that unlimited delegated power? It.
No.
Well.
You're trying to read something. Whatever's written there, I'm taking as an example the form of the Congress. They have Clause 8, or Section 8 defines 17 or 16 delineated powers. But over here in the House, they have a rules about how they're constituted, which is written by the people. Laws are abrogated or repealed by the same authority by which they are made. The authority that put those in place are the people, not the legislature. The legislature can write laws about those 17 or whatever powers that are listed, and they can repeal laws with regard to those 17 or 16, whatever the number is. So, that maxim applies in that way. Is that confusing?
I don't believe so.
Will, where are you? Is that okay?
I'm right here. I just unmuted. No, it's not confusing.
Okay. Now, abrogate and derogate, and I just went through these the other day, and do you remember what we said each, what the difference was? To derogate from a law is to take away part of it. To abrogate a law is to abolish it entirely.
What is the other word? I didn't understand it even. It sounds like you're saying zero gate.
D-E-R-O.
Okay.
Derogate.
Gotcha, okay.
Abrogate. To abrogate a law is to abolish it entirely. That's pretty straightforward. All shall have liberty to renounce those things which have been established in their favor. This is also in that section. So, I guess you can deny a liberty that you have.
Well, Chaplain Raymond is... Do you have to determine if it's in their favor, or does it have to be determined if it's in our favor before we can do that?
Does it have to be determined if it's in your favor? If we're dealing with contracts, you know, remember that it's, you get into the other rules. If you wrote the terms in the contract, they are interpreted in favor of the other man. Okay.
Okay. But that goes into the disclosure part where we didn't know about it on the. So we can.
Well, you're going into a specific example here.
Okay.
In general, I'm saying if you, when two people sit down and they do a proper contract, one is generally the one who puts the term a given thing. Both are going to be putting things in there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something that you put in there, you wrote the words and said, this is what I'm talking about, and there's acceptance and agreement, so to speak.
I understand.
If there ever comes a question, since you wrote it, it's presumed you understand it very well. And if there's the possibility of an ambiguity and the other man is responding to that ambiguity, he is not penalized for doing so. He, you know, the most severe interpretation is on the man that wrote it, so the guy that's interpreting it will be looked on favorably. Okay?
Okay.
It's getting pretty deep here. But it's the idea that it's attempting to be fair. You knew what you were talking about, and he's trying to figure out what you were talking about. And we can't penalize him for having to figure it out when you know it. You're presumed to know it and understand it. So it's going to be judged severely against the man who wrote it. Okay? But all shall be free to renounce those things which have been established in their favor. That's like saying, well, he was going to give me an extra $1,000. Well, he don't have to pay it. You follow me?
Yeah, I understand.
You are free to say, that's okay. And the court is not going to compel the man to pay it then. Because it was in your favor and you're renouncing it. Okay?
Okay.
Now, what song are we going to sing today, Chuck?
Kumbaya.
we have a new man on him, pulling some legs. Yeah. All right.
I've been practicing Michael Row the Boat Ashore.
We can do that one, too.
Anyway,
I take it you got sleep last night.
Did we? Yes. Yeah, I did, but it was, oh, man, I'll tell you. I'm not moving much today. Yeah, last 2 days on the telephone were just, I never thought I'd really look this favorably on Alexander Graham Bell, but I'm... I'm getting
it. All right. Well, thank you, Chaplain Raymond.
Is this any questions next visit Monday?
Sounds good. I'll try to get those out before then.
And are these generally this? We spent about 20 minutes today. Is that the general length duration?
No, it depends how long Chaplain Raymond blabbers his mouth.
Gotcha, okay.
Well, sometimes the principles are, this is annul, abrogate, and revoke. And this, that's kind of much more straightforward than some of them. The others are principles that are very, very important to us, so I dwell on them. But
gotcha.
About the most important one here in terms of government is who can repeal a law or who can... Now, I will add, for example, laws are abrogated or repealed by the same authority by which they are made. I have this little axiom, which is not necessarily written up in the common law maxims, but it says that when the sovereigns elect, go to the polls as electors, not as voters, but as electors, and select someone to assume a position, that is an offer. That is a covenant offer. When the individual raises his right hand and takes the oath, it is an acceptance. And what he is accepting is a duty to serve. And he's promising, when he promises to uphold the written compact, or the Constitution in our case, he, the man raising his right hand and promising the duty to serve, is saying, I will not exceed my authority in any way. I will serve you. I will not use this position to use more authority than you have given me. When it's a duty to serve. And this is a part of the self-government aspect that has been lost with the movement into this corporate government that's taking place all over the world, in which the sovereigns have now become slaves and subjects of the corporation.
And what kind of offer you it's an adjective to describe the offer. What was it again?
The election.
No, but then you said it is a X blank offer. I don't. It's okay.
I'm not sure what you're referring to. The election results are the determination of the sovereigns. And
right.
Then the man whom they are deciding to give the offer to. We're going to offer the job of president to you, Barack Obama.
Hmm.
That's the result of the election. Now, he must take the oath of office, but it's a duty to serve. And he must treat everyone equally, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he must not violate. And the oath is part and parcel of the covenant between the individual who's assuming the office and the men and ladies who are electing him to office. It's a covenant, and it is the superior covenant. They can make no law that supersedes that. Every law they make, or every rule they make, or every step they take, must conform to the limitations of the instrument that they're working under, which in this case is the Constitution should be the for the United States. And therefore, the oath, which is the superior covenant, a prior covenant, limits the things which they can do in the performance of their duty, which says that all laws passed by the legislature must conform to the Constitution. They cannot supersede it, usurp it, or exceed its limitations. And so the highest and chiefest, C-H-E-I-F, chiefest covenant is the oath of office. And we've not been taught that. Anything they do that is in excess of the limitations is a violation of their oath of office. Okay? Did that help some?
Yes, thank you.
Well, on the oath and the, okay. I guess we're going to sign off now then.